Hello and welcome to tonight's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. With you as always, this is your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. And man, that didn't take long at all, did it? If you're wondering what I'm talking about, we're talking about the time between Ted Cruz making his official announcement to run for the office of president, seeking the Republican nomination, and the time for everybody and their grandmother to come out and start attacking. Look, he knew this was going to happen. Everybody knew this was going to happen. That's when nobody wanted to be first. Ted Cruz in particular was a much bigger target because he was a Tea Party favorite, which means the Republican GOP establishment don't like this guy. Number one, he made a point of leading by example. He stood up on the floor of the Senate and he conducted an honest-to-goodness, old-school, the way it's supposed to be done, filibuster. And he did it taking a stand on principle. Principle only. One of the more disappointing things I think I saw was a statement attributed to Rand Paul, who also made waves not long before Ted Cruz gave his filibuster. Rand Paul attempted a filibuster, didn't last as long, didn't function as well, didn't stand on the same principle, but brought a lot of national attention to the fact that Barack Obama seemed to think it was okay to kill whoever he wanted to via drone strike. That's what he did. Did he feel like he was upstaged because he didn't get in first? Rand, get in the race. Who will be next? What will be next? Well, they're already coming out hot and heavy. The long knives are sharpened, and they're coming for Ted Cruz. People on both sides of the political spectrum have set their target firmly on the man who had the courage, the nerve, and the gumption to step to the forefront first. I got to tell you, I like Ted Cruz. I think he is a genuine man of principle. I think he's demonstrated that principle over time. And for all the criticisms that are out there, and we'll address some of them tonight, and if anybody wants to hop in the chat room and throw some information out there, we can talk about that as well. But I think this man can answer the challenge. And there are a ton of challenges to be answered. First and foremost, you know, to be the president of the United States is the toughest job on the planet, if you actually do it. That's why Barack has had such an easy go of it. The occupier has never actually taken the time to govern. He's always been in fundraising or campaigning mode, period. If it wasn't for Valerie Jarrett actually running his administration, I don't think anything at all would be getting done. Not that that should surprise anybody. But here's the thing. Ted Cruz is a man who understands the Constitution and cherishes it, is willing to stand up and defend it, is willing to stand up for the people of this country, as he has done already, for no purpose other than the fact that that's the job he begged for when he became a senator. But Ted Cruz has not had an easy road. He's come up a hard way, the way a lot of honest-to-goodness true conservatives have. There's nothing terribly unique, and yet it's completely unique. It's the story of an American. And that's where we'll kind of peel off first, because here's the thing that's really surprised me. And we've talked about it some on the show before, particularly on the Sunday show, where we've discussed his eligibility, and that's become a hot topic all of a sudden, mostly because a lot of libs want to attack in the same type of fashion that a lot of folks went after Barry. And, you know, Barry has been at the forefront of whether or not he was eligible to be president over his citizenship. Was he truly a natural-born citizen or not? Well, you know, I've always contended that it doesn't matter so much where he was born as much as what he had to do in order to attend public school in Indonesia. The requirements there, as I understand it, is that you have to be a citizen to attend public school. Indonesia doesn't have dual citizenship with other countries, so he had to give up his American citizenship. Now, is the naturalization process required for him to come back through to retain, to reacquire the American citizenship? To be honest, I'm not 100% sure how that works, but I honestly believe anything more that Barack Hussein Obama received financial aid in attending college under the guise of receiving foreign student aid. I think he did that on purpose to help pay for his school, and I think the threat of academic dishonesty, a try fraud, could come back to haunt him, which is why he had those records sealed. Because if the schools were faced with the fact that he had received scholarship as a foreign student and his status as a U.S. citizen wasn't in question, then he would owe them that money back. And they might be forced to do something along the lines of, revoke his degrees. Students have had their degrees revoked in major universities for less. Sometimes it's just the accusation of plagiarism. But we'll move away from that. The thing here is, I want this to be a non-Obama zone tonight. I mean, we're going to have to touch on it, I know, but let's focus on Ted and other topics. We can talk about other things. But what's hilarious is the fact that the left jumped on this as soon as he announced. You even had people like Whoopi Goldberg and the ladies at The View raising the stink about how they wanted to see his birth certificate and they're first in line and blah, 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 yakety, smackety. Whatever, Whoopi. All right? Settle down. Been a while since you've done anything of significance. I understand. But you should be a happier person, Whoopi. You've had a great deal of success in Hollywood. You've done things that people love you for. Your role in Ghost, for example. Sister Act. People love that. You did a good job, Whoopi. You're talented. Personally, as a not-so-closet but sort of almost Trekkie, I loved you in Next Gen when you played Guinan. Both on the television show and on the movie Generations. You're good at what you do as an actress and a comedian. So do that and leave the political... leave the world of the political to the people that's their thing. Okay? You only embarrass yourself, Whoopi. But, you know, again, let's bring it back. Like I said, we've talked on this show. We've heard the talk. It's been all over the place about the fact that, Ted Cruz is Canadian. Ted Cruz is Canadian. Okay, Ted Cruz was born in Canada. And his father was Cuban. Yep. That's right. Ted is half Cuban. His mother was born in Delaware. Now, the question about whether or not someone's a natural-born citizen is a little vague if you look just at the Constitution. And ordinarily, that's where I say, let's go to the toll of the tape. The Constitution says... Only, there's not a lot in the Constitution describing exactly what a natural-born citizen is. So, with, like a lot of other topics, it helps sometimes to look at things like the Federalist Papers. It helps to take a look at... What did the founders have in mind? What did the framers have in mind when they were putting the Constitution together? Well, obviously, they were concerned about the possibility of a foreign agent becoming the chief executive and, worse than that, commander-in-chief. So they wanted to make sure that you couldn't just come to the States for a little while, go through the motions, memorize the stuff you needed to memorize for your test, although... You know, whatever it took to become naturalized, they wanted you to be able to skip that. So under that precept, a lot of legal minds, especially in the last few months, have come out. They come forward, folks from the Harvard Law Review, former Solicitor General from both the Obama administration and the Bush administration have come forward. A lot of people are saying the same thing, and they're saying the same thing that applied for Mr. McCain when he was running, because a lot of people made a big stink about John McCain being born in the Panama Canal Zone. His father was in the military, was serving there at the time of his birth. Here's the deal. If you have a natural-born citizen parent, if both parents are citizens, and Ted Cruz's father did become a citizen. He had to be naturalized, but he was Cuban. He was born Cuban. He is Cuban. Okay, I got that. Hispanic. For those of you who want to start playing and turning the left's playbook on their ear, hey, you just don't like Ted Cruz because you don't like Hispanics. You're a racist. How's it feel, lefty? You're a racist. Yeah, I know. It's pretty much hollow, right? Just as hollow as the words were when you made that claim about every single conservative on the planet who questioned any of Barack Obama's policies. You question a policy, you were automatically a racist. Well, you know, that same game can be played, but I'm tired of playing the games. I'm tired of other people playing the games. Politics is not a game. It is for some people, like Karl Rove. Karl Rove has his hands full having picked a fight with Glenn Beck. Although, actually, the fight was kind of off to the side. It's a sidebar. The two of them aren't directly involved. Glenn has been saying for a very long time, and I guess it kind of goes to show how well people are paying attention. Glenn Beck has been saying for a very long time he's not a GOP guy. He's not happy with the party. He hasn't supported them. He's been selling T-shirts for over a year. I don't know exactly how long, but well over a year. Read, defund the GOP. Okay, he's obviously not a Republican Party guy. He's an independent conservative. No mystery there. Hasn't shown any financial support for the party. If ever, who knows? I don't know. He's been saying for a very long time that he's over it, no more. That got reported by certain media outlets as if it was a brand new newsflash, and oh my gosh, and they made a big deal about it, and Karl Rove made a statement because he's being asked about it on one of the Sunday shows. And basically he called Glenn irrelevant, which obviously that's not the case. And I think they're going to get a good dose of that. But the bottom line is, Carl, you need to stay focused. Your boy Jeb's in trouble now. Because Ted is only the first to come out. But let's continue with the attack. The long run story. Such notable personalities like Donnie Deutsch got involved. He showed up on Morning Joe. And he was giving Ted down the road, talking about how he was slimy and dangerous and... Really? Donnie, seriously. Do you know Ted Cruz? Have you met Ted Cruz? Have you paid any attention to his career? Or are you just falling in line with all your little liberal buddies who think, oh my gosh, this guy believes in the Constitution. He must be dangerous. He's a real radical. At any rate, show your ignorance a little more, Donnie. Keep saying this stuff. Make it stronger. California governor said Ted Cruz isn't fit to hold office. Really? Well, now you know why there's a very different voting bloc between California and Texas. All I know is right now, I'm very excited about Ted Cruz being in the race because Ted Cruz impressed me before his filibuster. He impressed me as being somebody who said the right things and seemed to be doing the right things as well. Not only was he being a very good representative of the people of Texas, he took his constituents and his district in particular into account with all his actions, but he also took the Constitution of the United States into account with all of his actions. He took steps and was willing to stand on principle when others around him, the leadership, refused to stand on principle because they were afraid of the political outcomes. There's a perceived threat that we may not be able to win an election if we do what we're supposed to do. Now, I'm tired of yammering about how important it is for the people that beg for the job actually go to D.C. and do the job. Shouldn't be that hard. But then, on the night of the filibuster, Ted Cruz continued to make cogent points and continued to make his arguments, taking only one short pause from that to on-air read a children's story to his kids around their bedtime, knowing that they'd be watching on C-SPAN. And the way the left made fun of him on the next morning for doing that, and the fact that it didn't bother him, that showed me that this is a man of character. Because we all know, and we talked about it here on the show, and several other folks probably talked about it too, but we knew the left was going to do something like that. We knew they were going to poke fun, make wisecracks, be belligerent. But we also know that just the same, if the shoe had been on the other foot, if we had traveled back in time a few years before, and heaven forbid the Democrats ever actually did a filibuster, because let's face facts, all they've had to do is threaten a filibuster, and that's been good enough for the most part. But if they had actually tried to do a filibuster, and say a young freshman senator, the junior senator from Illinois, a Barry Cerebo, a Barack Hussein Obama, was to sit there and take a break and read a bedtime story to Mila or Sasha, who would be watching at home. They would ood and ah and fawned over him. Oh, what a wonderful father. This man is really in touch with what America needs. He's sensitive and caring as well as strong and forceful. Well, it would have been BS in Barack's case, because that would have been all for show. I'm convinced that it wasn't for show in Ted Cruz's case. Now, your opinion is your opinion. My opinion's mine. We're all entitled to ours. So I'm not trying to shout you down with that. I'm just saying that that's the moment, that's the time when he impressed me. Because he did the filibuster the right way. He didn't leave the floor. He stayed in his suit. In fact, I don't think he even unbuttoned a collar or took the tie off until many, many hours in. He did it the right way. He did what you're supposed to do when you're doing a filibuster. I don't think D.C.'s seen an honest-to-goodness filibuster to that extent. Who knows how long? He impressed me. He's a man who's willing to stand on principle. So, if he gets past this natural-born citizen stint, then it looks like he is. Legally, it looks like the question's settled, based on everything that I've seen and heard to this point. I don't think anybody with standing, as they like to call it, is going to make an effort to try and challenge him on it. But the bottom line is, what seems to be the legal consensus for the definition of natural-born citizen is that if they have citizenship at birth and don't have to go through a naturalization process to become a citizen. Now, if that is the definition, then Cruz is a natural-born citizen by being born to an American mother and having her citizenship at birth. Of course, the same logic would apply to Obama, even if he was born in another country. The The Congressional Research Service published a report on the issue after the 2008 election, and the agency, of course, is tasked with providing authoritative research to all members of Congress. It, too, supported the thinking that natural-born citizenship means citizenship held at birth. But the Supreme Court, the ultimate arbiter of the constitutional question, has never really ruled on the matter, and that means still a certain note of uncertainty. Sarah Duggins, a professor of law at Catholic University, has written about the studies and issued extensively. And she told several people, several media outlets, anybody that would listen, way back in 2008, that the question of natural-born citizenship is, quote, one of the most deceptively simple, complex issues. Later on, because the question came up again, she has been approached by a few news outlets about Cruz's eligibility, and she was quoted as saying, it would be reasonable to interpret the Constitution's natural-born citizenship provision to include children born abroad to U.S. citizens, including Senator Cruz, for a number of reasons. But with all that being said, is it still 100% sure? Unfortunately, we can't say for sure without either a definitive Supreme Court ruling or an amendment to clarify the Constitution, neither one of which I think would happen before the election. The bottom line is, most people in legal circles say yes, and I think that's going to be good enough for him to have his run. And if he runs and wins the nomination, I say more power to him. I'll support him. There's a couple other candidates that I'd like to see in the race. I would really like to see Scott Walker in this race officially. And, you know, I do kind of like Rand Paul, although not as much as I do Ted Cruz or Scott Walker for a couple of different reasons. But I would really like to see these three guys in the race. I'd like to see it come down to these guys deciding to have to join forces, and I would love a ticket Cruz-Walker, Walker-Cruz, although I think Cruz has to go first now. I think Cruz has to be, either one of these guys decides to hitch their star to his, you have to let him go just by virtue of him going first, getting out front, and taking all these hits now. Because what wasn't surprising is when the left reacted so violently, because most of them are scared of him. Most of them understand that this guy has the type of charisma and has the type of principles and the willingness to stand on them that we have not seen in the conservative ranks since the last time Ronald Reagan graced the White House. This guy is a unifier. This guy could be the next Reagan. In fact, this guy could potentially make such a mark of his own, especially if he gets the right running mate, that someday people could say Ronald Reagan was the Ted Cruz of his generation. God, we need that in this country right now. We need good, strong, conservative American leadership back in the White House. We don't have that. Right now, we have a guy who wants to give away the keys to the nuclear kingdom to a country that wants to kill every last Jew and every last American. Now, granted, the country itself doesn't want to, but the people who run the government there, they do. This is who we're negotiating with. This is who we're going to try to enter into binding agreements with. It's dangerous, to say the least. We need the type of president that when he says something to a foreign nation, they believe what he says. if he gives a warning that America will react, and this is how we'll react to your behavior in a certain fashion, they need to know what's going to happen. There's going to be follow-through. Not just, here's a red line that we're going to change once you cross it, and then change again, and then say, well, I never had a red line. Please. Now, yeah, I get that Obama doesn't really call very many of the shots in his administration. He doesn't, okay? In fact, Obama may be a nice guy. He certainly seems nice enough sitting at the court side of the Princeton basketball games because Michelle's niece is playing, and of course he somehow thinks that's going to make him look cooler. I mean, he may be a nice guy. He may not even be the ideologue that everybody seems to think he is. Because let's face it, these policies, they're not his. It's not his White House. He's just a front guy. We know this. We've seen all the signs. We know all the evidence. He doesn't even take security briefings. There's no way he could. Remember, every single time something breaks out, the first he hears about it, it's the same way we do. Watching the television news or reading the newspaper. Doesn't matter what it is that's happening, that's always his source of information. So obviously this man does not take security briefings. And why would he? In fact, I say he probably still doesn't know what Benghazi was. I bet you Hillary does. I bet you Hillary wished she could have got those emails erased much sooner before anybody found it out. Where she had them stored to erase them from in the first place. Didn't I say I wanted to stay away from the Dems? Yes, let's get back. But anyway, we understood, we knew the attacks were coming. But what about the folks on the right that attacked? I mean, Rand Paul made a statement, came out pretty negative. Here's what I have to say to Rand. Rand, I definitely want you in the race, but here's the deal. Rand, make the case for you. This is the part of the process in campaigning for the nomination that you make the case for you. You don't worry about making a case against anybody else in the field until a little later on. Right now is the time to make the case for you. And you've got a great case to make. So make the case for you, Rick. Leave Ted alone. Ted likes you. Every interview that I've heard so far, when your name pops up, he likes you, he respects you. Now, whether that's true or not behind the scenes, who knows. But again, Ted Cruz to me is the kind of guy that seems believable enough. I mean, maybe he's just better at the game. Maybe I'm falling for the same traps. Maybe I'm just so desperate for a real leader that I'm willing to see one where there isn't. Maybe. Going to take a quick break here in just a minute, and then when we get back, we're going to discuss the next roadblock that a lot of people like to say is a problem for Ted, that being his experience. And of course, people are trying to draw comparisons between his experience and the occupiers' experience. We'll talk about that when we get back. That'll be in just a moment. Stay with me.
Looking for a miracle.
right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with us. I had to take a bit of a break there. I'm going to go ahead and take this opportunity to remind you that all the music you hear on this show is provided by Magnatune. It's a lovely service. It allows independent artists to make a little bit of money on the side, so I get to support them, and it also makes sure that everything here is podcast safe. With one notable exception, the song you just heard, Miracle, performed by a good personal friend of mine, Cash Islow, have special permission for that song. So if you hear that, you like it, and you want to use it, you decide to go check out Magnatune, sorry, this one isn't there. This one's special permission, but you know what? If you like it enough and you decide to send me a comment or send me a message, either through the website or even through the chat room here, if you like, I'm pretty sure I can probably work out something for you. I can talk to Cash for you, and, you know, what artist doesn't like to have their work promoted? All right, let's get back to the issue. We're talking about Ted Cruz's experience now. What do we have? We have a senator who has no accomplishments as a senator. At least that's what they say. And has very little experience in the U.S. Senate. I've heard a lot of people already saying, we tried that already. That's Barack Obama. There's some pretty big differences, though. Because, remember, what we talk about a lot on this show in particular is the fact that we don't need politicians to be holding office. What we need are honest to goodness everyday American folk, people that have worked, people who have earned a living. I know sometimes our definitions of earning a living can be a little different depending on where we're at and who we are, but people who understand what it means to live on a budget, people who have actually had private sector, real-world jobs where results are expected, required even, in order for you to keep the job. Barack Obama was a community organizer and a teacher. And not knocking on teachers, because he wasn't like a elementary school teacher. He was a collegiate teacher, where there's not a whole lot of pressure. The results are measured by how many people in your class, how they fill out your class survey, and then looked at who passes, who fails. These are the types of measures. We've got several people on record that taught at the same time that Barack was teaching. They've all said they didn't like him, that he didn't have a very good work ethic, he was lazy as a teacher. But, you know, it's really easy to make those comments, so, you know, take it for what it's worth. You got to take stuff like that with a grain of salt. Yeah, I personally, I don't like the guy. I tend to think a lot of these people are telling the truth, but it's still from their point of view. You know, I understand from my own situations that the people that work around you, they may know part of what your job is, but unless they're actually right there beside you all day, they don't know what all you're doing. So I'm willing to give that a pass. I'm going to ask you to be willing to give that a pass. I know, that's can be hard. But what do we have? We have a lot of mystery surrounding Barack Obama. We have the fact that if he was born in Hawaii, why does he never actually come across with an actual birth certificate? Well, I think part of that is because as long as people are talking about that, they're not paying enough attention to what he's up to now. I think that's part of it. I think he's intentionally put the forgeries out there to keep people talking about it. Because as long as they're talking about the birther issue, as they like to call it, then you're not talking about the, oh my God, he's selling out the American people issue. And we're not. But what did Ted Cruz do? What has he done before he became a senator? You know, I came across some interesting things. In fact, over at MRC TV, org. On one of the blogs, the staff blog, printed out today, was an interesting thing called 8 Interesting Facts About Ted Cruz You Didn't Know. Now, some of you probably already knew it. If you listen to people like Glenn Beck or Mark Levin, they've went over several of his accomplishments before becoming a senator as well. So if you listen to those shows, then you probably already know some of this, but let's go over some of it. You know, number one, Ted Cruz set a few records as Texas Solicitor General. He was the first Hispanic Solicitor General of the state of Texas. He was also the youngest person to become the Solicitor General in the United States. Cruz argued cases in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. Proud to say that I knew that. Cruz has argued 9 cases, in fact, in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. This record of having argued before the Supreme Court 9 times is more than any practicing lawyer in Texas or any current member of Congress. Running for the Senate was his first political campaign, which means Teddy Boy actually managed to find success his first time out. Something tells me person that stands on principles the way he did, if he wasn't running in Texas, that wouldn't have happened. But at any rate, before running for and winning his Senate seat in 2012, he had never held an elected office before. His win was the biggest upset of the 2012 election, according to a lot of people. Ted Cruz was a law clerk for a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Back in 1996, Ted Cruz served as a law clerk to William Rehnquist. He was also the first Hispanic to clerk for a Chief Justice of the United States. He earned degrees from 2 Ivy League universities. 2 of them. Cruz graduated cum laude from Princeton University with a B.A. in Public Policy. His second degree was from Harvard Law School, where he graduated magna cum laude with a Juris Doctorate degree. Now, this one's on the list, although we've already talked about this, and, you know, the bottom line is, unless you've been under a rock and paid absolutely no attention the last couple of days, you already knew this one. Ted Cruz was born in Canada. What's that about? Ted Cruz is Canadian. Evidently, Ted Cruz was born in Calgary back in 1970. His parents were working in the oil business in Canada. His father was born in Cuba and his mother was born in Delaware. We've covered all this. And he is a U.S. citizen because his mother was born in the United States. He held dual citizenship in both the United States and Canada until he revoked his Canadian citizenship back in 2014. Although that probably really wasn't necessary. But, you know, you just can't make some people happy. Cruz was a law professor. Okay, now here's something else he has in common with Barack. Oh, no. Before becoming a senator, Ted Cruz was an adjunct law professor. From 2004... to 2009, Cruz taught U.S. Supreme Court litigation at the University of Texas. Number 8 on the list was won a debate national championship. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Cruz, along with his classmate David Panton, won the American Parliamentary Debate Association's national championship while he was at Princeton. Cruz was also named Speaker of the Year. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't Princeton now have the Ted Cruz Award for their best debater in a season? I think they do. So anyway, that's just some of his accomplishments that actually mean something in the world of constitutionally limited government. Many of those things, although there was one, means so much more than anything that Barack did. And then the real question, the one thing they did have in common, the fact that they were both law professors, brings me to the question of who did a better job? I don't know, but I tend to think that at the University of Texas, if Cruz wasn't doing a bang-up job, they probably wouldn't have retained him. I mean, I am astounded at the fact that some of the smartest people in the country attend the Ivy League universities. Some of them have no skill other than that of debate. Ted Cruz was said to be so good at it that many of his professors were, quote, in awe of his intellect. Now, that's a quote that came from one of the managing editors of the Huffington Post, which led me to ask the question today when I shared that link at the Tap Into the Truth Facebook page. Did the guy forget for a few minutes who he worked for? Because, you know, there's no way that anybody associated with the Huffington Post should be saying anything nice about Ted Cruz. You know, the Huff Post is all about the liberal side of the street. Ted Cruz represents a major threat to these people. But here's the thing that everyone needs to pay close attention to. You can tell a lot about a person by who their friends are. You can tell even more about them by who their enemies are. The people who came out against him today, and the people who have come out against him since he announced yesterday, they're all people who have a stake in the status quo, or have a stake in him being unsuccessful because it means it improves their chances of success. In the end, the people who come out after Ted Cruz makes me feel even better about him running. You know, if you listen to the show at even a semi-regular basis, you know that I stand by the Constitution. I want constitutional restrictions to the government at all times. I want the Constitution to be upheld. I want it to be kept close to the heart of every American, and I don't want Ted Cruz to be eligible to be president if he's not a natural born citizen. But at this point, having looked at their definitions and read all the material that I've read to this point, I'm still not done. I'm going to keep researching. I'm going to see if I can find anything more definitive. But at this point, and I reserve the right to change my mind on this if I come across something more. But based on what I've read to this point, I'm willing to accept Ted Cruz as a natural-born citizen. And as such, I'm willing to say that Ted Cruz not only is eligible to be president, but as far as I'm concerned with the current field, since technically he's the only one anyway, he's the most qualified. Again, I would love to see Scott Walker get into this race officially. I would love to see a ticket that included Cruz and Walker. I would stand a ticket that included Cruz and Rand Paul. There's not too many other candidates out there, or potential candidates out there, that I'm particularly excited about. I don't know how the rest of you feel. I know I'm definitely not happy about the prospects of Jeb Bush. I think he's far too progressive. I feel the same way about Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee is a big supporter of the Common Core. And the way this has been set up, you know, there are some serious issues with it. It's not what it's being sold as. Not that we're very surprised by that. But when it comes down to it, Huckabee should not be in the GOP. Other than having some religious beliefs, he's not particularly that conservative. And yeah, I feel the same way about Jeb Bush. So either one of those guys I think we need to run away from, screaming, run away, run away! It's not a good thing. Trust me on this. Not a good thing. But beyond that, anybody else who jumps in, Ben Carson was somebody that early on I thought might have made a good candidate, but at this point in time, I really don't think he's ready yet. I mean, how much time does it take to get ready? It takes some seasoning. He's not used to the world of the body politic. Which on the one hand, again, is good. We've discussed that at length. Send people to hold the office that aren't politicians. That's good. But I don't think he's ready yet to handle himself in the public eye in a way that will allow him to maneuver, to maintain the interest of the people, and not allow the press to try and crucify him every time he wants to do something. You know how the press went after W. Well, lots of times they had plenty of ammunition to do exactly that. But in this case, Ben Carson could say something completely innocent, and they're going to twist it around. I don't think he's ready for that yet. Ted Cruz, though. Can you imagine a debate between Ted Cruz and anybody the Democrats are going to throw out there? Now, I really don't think the Democrats want Hillary Clinton. I don't think they want her. I think we've demonstrated plenty enough information and examples over the past few weeks of how they've turned on her. You know, honestly, I don't think if the Democrats really wanted Hillary Clinton, I don't think Barack Obama would have been able to overtake her when they were running against each other for the nomination a few short years ago. But, be that as it may, you hear a lot of people clamoring for Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren, Elizabeth Warren. I hear some folks saying that Al Gore needs to come out of retirement. Oh my gosh, how scary would that be? But, you know, here we go. Let's take any one of those three. Mostly because those are the only three that I think are realistic at this point. There's still a lot of time between now and the nomination, so a lot of things can happen. But right now, I think it's safe to say that as far as the Democrats are concerned, it's got to either be Hillary, Elizabeth Warren, or a miracle return by Al Gore. Because I don't think Joe Biden has a chance no matter what gets said or done. I just don't. I could be wrong. I can't adequately anticipate every crazy move the liberals are going to make. The so-called progressives are completely off the rockers for the most part, so who knows? But based on where things are right now, I honestly don't think Joe Biden has a chance. In fact, I'd be surprised if he actually tries to run. I mean, I would be totally shocked, but I would be surprised, because I think, despite the fact that Uncle Joe can be pretty entertaining at times, I don't think he's a complete and total moron. I don't think he wants to be in a position where he gets embarrassed the way he probably would be if he went after the nomination. Because even Hillary should mop the floor with Joe. And like I said, I don't think the party wants Hillary. But I think they would want Joe Biden even less. Elizabeth Warren is somebody they can get behind. But anyway, let's take those three. Can you imagine a debate between Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton? Imagine a debate between Ted Cruz and Elizabeth Warren. So that intrigues me more than any of the others, though. Because Hillary's a criminal, and she's a liar. That's been pretty well demonstrated. Al Gore, I'm not sure if he's lying or if he's just out of touch with reality. I try to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'll say that Al's probably just out of touch with reality. Because, it's not a lie if you believe it. If you think it's true at the time you say it, it's not a lie. And I think Al does believe a lot of what he says. So I'm not going to call Al a liar. There are times he has lied, I'm sure, but I'm not going to call Al a liar right here. I'm going to say Al is out of touch. But I think of those three candidates, Elizabeth Warren is the most interesting for the debate purposes to me, because then you really do have somebody who, at the very least, she stands on the principles that she believes in. She is one of the so-called progressives. She makes it very clear. She doesn't mince words. She tells you exactly who she is, what she wants, what she stands for. And I would think it would be so very interesting to see somebody who stands on principle and the Constitution, the way Ted Cruz has to this point, who's good at debating, going up against the exact polar opposite of that, and then let the American people decide once and for all, or at least for the time being, what direction is truly right for America. I think that poses a very interesting debate possibility. But regardless of all of that, no matter how else you cut it up, however you divide it, one thing is undeniable at this point. Ted Cruz is running for president. Right now, he's running for the Republican nomination. And he's the first big name candidate to officially announce. And I say big name because there are other candidates that aren't really as well known, media darlings. I was going to say aren't exactly media darlings, but you know, the bottom line is Cruz isn't exactly a media darling, is he? The media doesn't like him. But at any rate, I say this because I've actually had as a guest on the Sunday show, Hiv Tap Into the Truth, someone who has announced their candidacy for the Republican nomination several months back. I'm not going to tell you about it right now. I'm going to ask you to go back and check out the past shows of Tap Into the Truth. For this one, you'll have to go over to blogtalk.com. Look up the Tap Into the Truth show page. And then you will see a few episodes down someone running for president. So that's your challenge. I'm challenging you. There's actually two titles. I need to go back and edit the first title. I haven't gotten around to it. I did edit the show description, though, because the first time he was scheduled to be on, he had a scheduling conflict. He wasn't able to make it, but he was on the next week. And that week, had a good conversation with the gentleman, and you know, it was enlightening and it was a good thing. So I mean, Cruz isn't technically the first candidate in the race, but for all intents and purposes, the way the media is going to spin it, the way everybody from Fox News to CNN is going to say it, that's going to be the deal. But Cruz is in, and the question now becomes, what's next? Because what we're going to have is people on both sides of the aisle are going to continue to attack, but support's going to grow. You can go to tedcruz.org, where he is supposedly, and I say supposedly because this is from various reports, receiving tons of support, and has already received several tens of thousands of dollars in donations from small contributors. When you can do that in less than 24 hours time, as he's done, that's pretty promising. I think Ted has a pretty good chance of making some noise. So, tell you what. Gonna take another quick break, and then when we get back from that, we'll take a quick look at a few other stories circulating. Some of them related to politics. Some of them not directly to politics, but a result of the political climate. We'll get to that and a little bit more when we get back. Stay with us. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with us. As always, this is your host, Tim Tapp, and we are bringing you Tapp into the Truth from historic Roane County, Tennessee. If you're listening to the show, you've obviously found us, but if you're looking for other ways to consume the show, you know, whether you're listening live or looking to find us on podcast, you can certainly find the podcast at iTunes. You can find us at Stitcher.com. You also can find us at TuneIn. Lots of times, past broadcasts are also easily found at TappIntoTheTruth.com. That's T-A-P-P, IntoTheTruth.com. If you're looking for us at Stitcher, I've explained before, I do shows, the show here at Spreaker.com, where you can find this also archived. And I also do shows, primarily a Sunday show over at Blog Talk. And what happens if you're looking for us on Stitcher, you'll actually have to program us in differently. The Blog Talk version of the show you can find if you go to the Browse Shows and then go to News and Politics and then go down Conservative Politics and then just go down the page, you'll find Tap into the Truth. However, if you're looking for the Spreaker version of the show, which this would be included, you have to actually run a search, and you have to put quotations around TAP, T-A-P-P, into the Truth. You run the search without quotations around TAP, and it will take you to the Blog Talk version. You put quotations around it, it'll take you to the Spreaker. So I'm not real sure why we couldn't unify the shows at Stitcher, but at any rate, both versions are there. You can find us there. Some of you guys have obviously already done that because we're getting lots of play over at Stitcher. In fact, Stitcher is the fastest growing segment of the listening audience of the show. And let me tell you, thank you. Appreciate it. Anybody takes the time to choose to listen to this show as opposed to all the other great content that's available, especially if you go someplace like Stitcher or Tuned In, tons and tons of great content. The big names, some of the other names, a lot of podcasters, a lot of folks that do really good shows, a lot of folks doing things in completely different genres. You take the time to listen to this show, I appreciate it. So again, thank you. Now let's get to some non-political, but a result of political climate stories. We're going to move away from the Ted Cruz stuff for now, and we're going to talk about something that's going on in a Lexington high school. See, this aggravates me. This bothers me a great deal. I mean, I'm literally have torn emotions all the way around about this story, because on the one hand, it's so funny that it would be hysterical if it wasn't real. You know, if you didn't have to deal with the anger that comes from the fact that somebody has actually taken us down this road. At any rate, high school's American Pride dance has been deemed offensive because it celebrates America, so they canceled it. An American Pride dance at Lexington High School in Massachusetts was canceled because it celebrates the United States. Specifically, it promotes the U.S. exclusively, and the school administrators deemed that to be offensive. I want to see the teacher's green card, please. What administrative officials at the school thinks that there's anything offensive about the United States? They've obviously been studying the wrong history books. At any rate, Assistant Superintendent Carol Pulowski explained, quote, "Given the diverse demographic of our community, it was suggested by the advisors that the students come up maybe national pride theme so they could represent their individual nationalities. Many of the students and teachers were surprised and dismayed at the school's decision to cancel the dance. In fact, several students expressed confusion about the decision, saying things like, quote, people consider America to be a melting pot, so the fact that it was even considered offensive is what people are so surprised about. Evidently, the theme for the dance was put to a vote. The American theme received the most votes, and the school's dance committee before it was nixed by the higher-ups. School administrators have now created a national pride dance, feeling that it could be more diverse and inclusive. Students still could, of course, wear red, white, and blue if they want. At least that's what the school says. Can somebody please tell me what's going on in this country? It's bad enough that you've got student governments, certain California state institutions that want to ban flags from their lobby. You know, we talked about that. You know, to an extent, I'm okay with that under the certain circumstances and if they're treating all flags fairly. Excuse me. But we're talking about a high school in Massachusetts where the kids voted. They want to have an American theme. They want to have an American pride dance. And I also want to know, what nationalities are you celebrating, you crazy little guys, you, the school administrators? What other nationalities are you celebrating? How many different nationalities are represented in your school district? Because chances are, while there may be a large number of people living in that community that can trace their heritage just a generation or two to another nation, I'm still willing to bet that most of the kids that are attending your school are actually Americans. So, again, the United States is their nationality. You may have some that are foreign exchange students. Okay, but they've come to America to learn about America, to see it firsthand, to experience it firsthand. And you can't experience Americana by being mealy-mouthed and by being so subversive and demonstrating a hatred for this country instead of a love for it. Maybe if you spend a little more time embracing the idea that America, the United States, the freedom it provides you, the people who sacrificed their lives, their limbs, their blood, their sweat, their tears, their families, the people who have given and given unto you without ever knowing you, that have never met you, if you would take the time to understand that all this was done so that you could have a job at a school, a job you chose, a job where you have a chance to influence the young minds of future Americans, maybe then you could embrace the simple truth that is, America's a pretty dadgum good place to be. Is it perfect? No. Have we made our mistakes? Yes. Have we done bad things in the past? Yes. On the whole, there is still no greater nation in the history of the world, period, end of discussion. Anybody got a problem with that? Too bad. Because you can argue it. You can take any statistics you want and try to use them to make your case. But it still comes down to the same thing in the end. And that is, the United States of America is a creation of the God Almighty. It is His blessings that have allowed us to become a great nation. And it will be the continuation of those blessings that allow us to continue to be a great nation. Not the constant push away from faith and people of faith and people of principle that the left constantly tries to push upon us. The only principles that the left stands for is the death cult of abortion. The only principles that the left stands for is the cult of population control and of the art of division. When was the last time you had a talk with an honest-to-goodness so-called progressive who didn't want to put you into a box, who didn't want to label that box, and then try to tell you that you should be fighting everybody else that's in a different one of their boxes? I promise you, you haven't actually had a conversation with one of them if that didn't happen. Because that's what they do. That's what they're about. Yes, let's talk about our diversity. The kid in the interview was right. The United States is a melting pot. But the problem with being a melting pot is that means that those cultural boundaries that existed before get dissolved and you get blended in with the new culture that is the American culture. If you're not willing to accept American culture, you don't belong here. And that's not a negative statement. That is simply a statement of truth. I would not go to France and expect the French to suddenly start acting American. I would not go to Iran and suddenly expect the Iranians to start acting American. There's a few places on this planet, if I went there and acted that way, I would probably be shot just for that. So I would much rather stay here, where I have the freedom to say this for at least as long as the FCC isn't utilizing this new net neutrality rules and saying that shows like mine can't be aired anymore. I will stand up for the principles of freedom where I can, but this isn't about freedom. They don't have the freedom to choose. They don't have the freedom of expression. This is about politically correct educators afraid that they might offend someone who obviously has far too thin skin if it's going to offend them that you have a dance that honors and promotes the notion of the United States. That is, after all, Massachusetts. Something that you're a part of. Granted, I know a lot of lefties up there. I mean, I've been to the state. Beautiful state. A lot of hardworking folks, which is also part of what boggles my mind that so many of you fall in line with the socialist mentality. I don't understand that. Why, if you work as hard as you guys do, and you do, I've seen it for myself. I've spent time in and around the Boston area. I've been out to the Gloucester area. Loved it. Gloucester's a great fishing village, but it's so much more than that. I actually was drawn to visit the place because of the movie The Perfect Storm. It seems kind of silly to mention that now, but that's part of why I went there. Went there, actually went to the real Crow's Nest. A whole 9 yards, got the experience. Beautiful town. Spent a little time boogieing on over to Salem while we were up there, because it was in and around Halloween, so Salem's always kind of a fun thing with the witchy stuff. Just a touristy thing. I have to admit it, when I go on vacations, sometimes I act like a tourist. Go figure. When else are you going to get away with it, right? But I come back to the point that the people of Massachusetts are a hearty, strong, hard-working lot of folk. Why so many of you seem to think that the socialist ideology is something to embrace is beyond me. Anybody who works as hard as you guys do is entitled to keep what you've earned. You earned it. It's yours, you should get to keep it. Why don't you agree with that? I don't understand. Why do you think John Kerry is a good representative for you? Not only are we going to elect him to the Senate, but we're going to try to help get him elected as president. Why? I mean, once we figure out who folks are about, here in Tennessee, I got to tell you, we do still have some loose cannons. I mean, no state is devoid of them. Texas has Maxine Waters. I know they would like to trade her to California in some type of exchange program, but they've got her. They can't help it. Tennessee, we had Al Gore. But here's what I can tell you about Al Gore in comparison to Kerry up in Massachusetts, and that is Al Gore didn't win his home state when he ran for president. It's because the folks in Tennessee knew what Al was about and that he was off his rocker by that time. This man-made global warming BS is supposed to be some type of litmus test. It's one of the reasons why Donnie Deutsch went after Ted Cruz on Morning Joe. Oh, he's a denier and he's ignorant. The only thing ignorant there, Donnie, is the fact that you don't seem to understand that our climate has a lot more to do with cycles and solar activity than it does anything mankind has done. That's not to say that we shouldn't be good stewards. In fact, we should. We should take as good care of our planet as we possibly can. We should. I'm not against that. I don't think Ted Cruz is against that. I'm pretty sure most conservatives would agree with that. Let's be smart. Let's take care of the planet we're living on. Let's take care of the love. But can somebody please explain to me how we've gotten to this point in this country where suddenly school administrators think that having an American bride dance in Massachusetts, a state that contains the cities of Lexington and Concord, where some of the first shots were fired in the American Revolutionary War, a place that should have more American pride than almost any part of this country, how people there can think an American pride dance is offensive? And since when, if we're going to talk about it, since when is being offensive grounds for not doing something? Last time I checked, most people on the left thought that when it comes to art, if it's not offensive, it's not really art. Isn't that the rule? Did I miss that somewhere? Can somebody help me out with that? Maybe I just didn't understand the memo. You know, throwing a crucifix in a jar and peeing all over it is art. Hanging a crucifix on your wall and confessing a love for Jesus, that's obscene. What? Really? Is that where we are in America today? Because if that's where we are in America today, something's got to change. Massachusetts, embrace your American pride. And again, I know this doesn't apply to all people in the state of Massachusetts. I understand that. There's, like I said, I've met several people that live there. Not a one of them I didn't like. Not one. As far as I know, they liked me back. They were very polite about it if they didn't. But regardless, what is this about? I mean, I can't wrap my mind around what is this about. American pride is offensive? Again, I refer you back to the Constitution. Freedom of speech is guaranteed. That's political speech. There's not just freedom of all speech. It's not there. People get confused about that, too. But freedom of political speech. Basically, that guarantees that, you know, as long as it's being properly applied, you're going to be offended. You're guaranteed to be offended. So again, schools in Massachusetts, it's almost your constitutional duty to offend somebody, especially if that offense occurs in the process of showing some pride in the good old U.S. of A. That story drove me nuts, and I've mulled it over all day, and all I've done is continue to get angrier and angrier. By the way, I did come across that article on Pundit Press, in case you're looking for it. You can find that thepunditpress.com, and then all you have to do is look up High School's American Pride Dance, and that'll take you to the article if you want to read the rest of it. And there's a lot of other great articles at the Pundit Press, by the way, so I recommend if you have time and you're looking for something worthwhile to take a look at, spend a little time there. Something else that kind of aggravated me, not that this is surprising, but did anybody catch the press briefing on the 20th? Now, today's the 24th, so it's been a few days back. I mentioned that because we're going to talk a little bit about that. But evidently, John Boehner, current Speaker of the House, has announced that he's going to make a visit to Jerusalem later this month. Not a lot of time left in this month, so I hope he gets on the ball. But, you know, good for him. Way to go, John. At the time, you did something that took a little backbone. And, you know, anytime an American goes to the Middle East, even if it is in Israel, that takes some backbone, because it is a completely different world over there. I mean, we here in the States, unless we live in the inner cities where we've got gangbanging activity going on so badly that there's shootings every night and all that wonderful stuff, unless you're in that situation, which a lot of Americans are not, So the folks who are, hey, guys, you don't have to be there. There's a lot of America where that's not happening every night. It's still happening, but it's not happening every night. But unless you're living in one of those raids, and let me get back to my point, I've started rambling again, please forgive me. Unless you're living in that situation all the time, then you have no idea what it's like to go anywhere in Africa or anywhere in the Middle East where there are suicide bombers and there are people shooting rifles, in many cases fully automatic rifles, at each other and launching mortar fire at each other. And in Israel in particular, they're constantly having mortar fire come across the border because of Hezbollah, which is financed through, who else? Iran. A lot of that money used to go through Syria before it got there, but since Syria's in the big mess it's in, Iran has to send it directly now. So, how inconvenient that must be. But at any rate, Johnny Boy, Mr. Boehner, Mr. Speaker, he's going to visit Jerusalem. Now, this will be his first trip to Israel since Barack became president, so that's kind of cool. I guess. According to Israeli news sources, the visit by the America's third highest ranking elected official is another very public stance against President Obama and his critique of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. This latest poke in Obama's eye comes as the administration reaches out to Iran's supreme leader. Boehner's show of support for Jerusalem is in opposition to U.S. President advancing a new foreign policy at the expense of a key ally and despite Congress's objection. Now, that's true. But what really aggravated me, what I thought was noteworthy, what I thought was absolutely irritating, and I was wondering if any of you guys caught this back on the 20th, Josh Earnest, the White House press spokesman, he really gave a pretty bright window into the full extent of Obama's hypocrisy when it comes to the dealings between Israel and Iran. He was getting some questions from a CNN correspondent, and, you know, it's not often you get probing questions from a CNN correspondent, but, you know, they weren't just sitting back taking it. They were asking some questions, so I'll give them credit where credit's due. They stood up, they were asking the right kinds of questions. Earnest said that the president feels it's appropriate to shun Israel after Netanyahu made campaign comments about a two-state solution with the Palestinians. Comments that the prime minister has since walked back on multiple occasions. Now, bottom line is, BB said that if he was reelected, there would never be a two-state deal with the so-called Palestinians. That's the deal. But at any rate, at almost the same time, you'll still have the White House spokesman saying that Obama feels that when the Iranian leader calls for death to America, which he did over the weekend, in case you missed that, death to America, well, that's all the more reason to want to make a deal about Iran's nuclear weapons program. So, even as the Iranian regime is calling for death to America, Obama is downplaying the threats while maintaining a hard line against Israel? Can somebody explain how that works? Is there really such a complete and total disconnect between the occupier and the reality? I mean, there's reasons why so many people for so long have accused Barack Obama of being a Muslim. One, he went to school in a madrasa. He was raised as a Muslim. He naturally is going to pick up some Muslim ideology, some Muslim tendencies, and he's been in the madrasa. It was a Wahhabist madrasa for that matter, too. Public schools in Indonesia are very interesting. he doesn't understand that he's the President of the United States. Because the President of the United States is going to be supportive of Israel and try and defend the world from the likes of the Iranian mullahs. He's taking just the opposite line, which is also odd because I'm pretty sure the Iranians are on the other side of the Sunni-Shia split as far as the side he normally takes, because whether he's Muslim or not, it's pretty clear the occupier, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama, if he's not Muslim, he sure as heck has a lot of strong ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. So many so, in fact, that I think he may be a member. I don't know if it's possible to be a member of the Muslim Brotherhood without being a Muslim. So maybe that's your answer. But pretty sure, at the very least, the Muslim Brotherhood thinks he's a member. He certainly has enough members of the Brotherhood in and around his administration. But it's because of things like this that people continue to believe he's Muslim. Now, I myself, I don't think he's a person of any kind of faith. I think in the mornings he wakes up and when he's praising God and saying a prayer to God, his idea of God, he's actually saying, praise Obama. Praise Barry. I think he's so full of himself that that's what he believes it is and the way it should be. I don't think he's particularly spiritual at all. I really don't. Then again, you know, I hate to make these type of assessments about a person, but when you look at it from the outside, that's certainly the way it looks. Right or wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope that he was telling the truth about converting to Christianity and that he is a Christian and that he spends time in prayer and eventually will come out of this freaky fog he seems to be in, if that's the case. I mean, I hope that. I would love for that to be true. But the bottom line is that this man is a liar. He's a performer. He's still trying to figure out how the hell Ted Cruz gave a speech at Liberty University for over 90 minutes and didn't use a teleprompter once. I know that's boggled his mind. How did you not use a teleprompter? How did he not use a teleprompter? Can it be because when you tell the truth, you don't need to remember the lies? Can it be because when you speak from the heart, you don't need people to write stuff for you? I don't know. Just throwing it out there for your consideration. Real quick, wanted to talk about a different story. We talked some in the show, was it last Sunday? I think it was Sunday before last. But anyway, talked about the Irvin, Texas mayor who decided to step forward and make it very clear that her city was not supporting the, quote, Sharia law court that a local mosque had decided to try to set up. Well, now, guess what? The mayor made a very public and a very strong statement against the Sharia court. Things have gotten interesting since then. See, the group of Muslims that attempted to establish this first Sharia court inside the United States in the town of Irving, Texas, just received a devastating blow thanks to the town's mayor standing strong and not backing down. Again, Mayor Beth Van Duyn made a public Facebook post stating that she backs the new Texas law which prohibits any kind of foreign law from being practiced in the state of Texas. Now, after calls and threats and toddler-like temper tantrum demands to apologize from the Muslims who attempted to form this Sharia tribunal, along with representatives from the Council on Islamic American Relations, get the hell out of this country, chair.
also known to be a front group for the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, the mayor didn't back down at all. No siree. She stood up, she made her feelings felt, and she continues to stand firm on her principled beliefs. There were a multitude of illegal activities taking place behind the attempted formation of the Sharia court, including the fact that all four of the voluntary Sharia lawyers were not licensed to practice law in Texas. That's a third degree felony, by the way. The rules of the Sharia court had different guidelines for women and men, with typical Islamic humiliation tactics to be used against women, which is constitutionally illegal. The Sharia court lawyers also conveniently failed to inform the city of Irving that they were operating a court inside the town. Again, illegal. The mayor's office responded to the public temper tantrum with a call for them to follow the Constitution and the American laws for the American Courts Bill, which prohibits foreign law from being practiced in the state of Texas. A bill that should be made into law in every state in the Union, if you ask me. I don't think there's any room for Sharia or any other foreign law, as far as I was concerned, anywhere in any member state of this federation. Now, the response was in a typical radical Islamic fashion. Quote, "We don't care about the bill. It's not going to affect us in any way, shape, or form. The bottom line is the foundation of this bill is anti-Islamic." Right before they called for kill the infidels. No, actually, they waited till the cameras were off to say that. But anyway, during the city vote to support the Texas bill, which passed by 5-4 vote, members from CARE were present attempting to intimidate the crowd by alleging that the bill was anti-Islamic and used words like bigotry and Islamophobia. Sounds like a bad movie. Islamophobia. But I bet if they got John Goodman to star in it, it'd be a hit. It worked for arachnophobia. What are you doing? At any rate, the bill makes no specific reference to Islam or Sharia. It merely states that no foreign law is to be practiced in the state. It should also be noted that one of the votes that opposed the bill was from a Muslim council member who addressed his fellow Muslims in the room before casting his no vote in dramatic fashion. We salute the mayor for staying strong in the face of the threats and intimidations from the radical Islamic members of the Sharia court. Her efforts to stop this abomination will echo throughout the country, setting precedent for other cities and towns where Muslims attempt to establish footholds. Make no mistake about it, that is what is going on when they try to set up a case. And that is why Texas is being targeted. For all intents and purposes, Texas right now is one of the remaining standing states. They understand what a republic means and what a republic's supposed to look like. So, once again, good job, Mayor. Gonna go ahead and wrap things up. Been on the air now for just about, and actually going just over 90 minutes now, so thank you for staying with us. An hour and a half is enough for one night. Let's keep things civil out there. Let's pray for Ted Cruz. So whether you like him or you don't, he's in for things that no person should have to endure, and so is his family. That's part of the political world we live in. He's taking a stand on principle, and he's taking that stand for you, whether you're a supporter or not, because the bottom line is, when he steps up to stand up for the Constitution, he is standing up for each and every single individual American and every potential future American so that they may still have a constitutional republic with democratically elected officials for the future. So whether you like him, hate him, or don't know much about him, if you pray at all, say a prayer for him and his family. And I mean a nice positive one, all you leftists and so-called progressives that is going to say something like, oh dear Lord, please get rid of that Ted Cruz. No, that doesn't count. That's not the kind of prayers I'm talking about. You don't have to pray for him to win. I'm not asking you to do that. If you want to, you can. Just pray for him to remain true to his word, to be able to stand on the principles and continued efforts to protect and serve the United States Constitution and the people of the United States of America and the people of Texas in particular. In the meanwhile, like I said, we're going to close it down here. So, ladies and gentlemen, please, no matter what else you do, don't take my word for it. Definitely don't take their word for it. Always be prepared to put in some work. Be ready to use your brain, keeping in mind that it's always going to cost you a little bit of effort if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it. Thanks. Have a great night, everybody. We'll be back again soon. Good night.
Counting down by the days, it went going by, I don't know what time.